COVID-19 hospitalizations have nearly doubled in November, how healthcare facilities are dealing with the surge. And as cases rise, some restaurants are defying state orders to lock down.
They say we're abiding by the capacity restraints that was established before this latest lockdown. We're sanitizing, we're having people wear masks, we have 6 feet distance between tables, but we need to survive, and we are willing to take the legal risk to do that.
Plus, with Christmas just around the corner, children are asking how Santa will stay safe and deliver presents during a pandemic. It's Friday, November 27th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. U.S. stocks finished the week strong, notching gains in an abbreviated trading session. Our markets reporter Mike Wursthorn has more.
The U.S. stock market edged higher Friday, pushing the S&P 500 and NASDAQ Composite toward new record highs and closing out a week of solid gains across all the major benchmarks. The Dow, S&P 500, and NASDAQ Composite all rose at least 2% over the holiday shortened week. Meanwhile, the Dow Industrials had crossed a significant milestone earlier after topping 30,000 on Tuesday. Analysts say investors have become largely uninterested in worrying about downside risks, helping to push stocks higher, but some warn of a volatile December as COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations threaten to dampen the economic recovery.
And U.S. hospitalizations are on the rise, surpassing 90,000 yesterday, according to the COVID-19 Tracking Project. The nation hit a new record on November 10th and has exceeded that number every day since. Our hospital reporter Melanie Evans says the unprecedented surge is pushing the system to the brink.
We are seeing hospitals try to expand their capacity. They are putting patients in offices and they are erecting medical tents so that they can, what they call, decompress. So they take some of the less severe patients and they move them to these kind of field hospitals or temporary hospitals so that they have more room inside for the more critical patients. The real limiting factor here is the need for doctors and nurses to take care of those patients no matter where they are, in a tent, in an office, in a former gymnasium for physical therapy, in an ICU bed. They need workers, and those workers are in such high demand. And they are also not immune to these widespread community transmission of the virus. And so hospitals are reporting that they are struggling with workers who are out for quarantine or out because they have COVID-19.
The continued surge is hitting small rural hospitals especially hard. Many of them depend on larger facilities with more specialists and equipment for transferring patients with complex illnesses. But many of those bigger facilities are now full, too. Another setback for the Trump campaign's efforts to overturn the election results. A federal appeals court in Pennsylvania has denied the team's appeal of an earlier decision, saying its claims had no merit and would cause drastic and unprecedented voter disenfranchisement. The ruling leaves the Trump campaign with diminishing legal options. It could appeal up to the U.S. Supreme Court, which would then have to decide whether to take up the case. And Iran says its top nuclear scientist was shot and killed on Friday. Iran's foreign minister blamed terrorists for the death of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, who was widely viewed as the father of Iran's nuclear program, adding that there were serious indications of Israeli involvement in the attack. The Israeli prime minister's office declined to comment. No one has yet claimed responsibility. Iranian officials have vowed revenge for the attack, which threatens to increase tensions in the Middle East. Coming up after the break, why some U.S. restaurants are defying orders to shut down. In the early days of the pandemic this past spring, tens of thousands of U.S. restaurants were forced to shut down. Now, as the nation is facing a new surge in coronavirus cases, some states, including Illinois, Michigan, and parts of California, are once again banning indoor dining. And some restaurants are pushing back. Joining me now with more details is our reporter Heather Haddon, who covers restaurants for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
So you spoke to some restaurant owners who are defying orders to lock down, some of them for a second time this year due to the pandemic. What did you hear from them?
Yeah, so I talked to a bunch of restaurant owners in Illinois, which is the first state to have a statewide indoor dining ban again. And basically they said, you know, it's either we do this or we're going to close. So some of these restaurants, you know, long established restaurants in these communities where they really haven't pivoted to go at all. They really need indoor dining patrons, and it's cold here now, so they're not really serving them outside. They're basically still serving people inside. So they say, you know, we're abiding by the capacity restraints that was established before this latest lockdown. We're sanitizing, we're having people wear masks, we have 6 feet distance between tables, but we need to survive, and we are willing to take the legal risk to do that.
And speaking about that risk, this has led to litigation in some areas, but what kind of penalties are restaurant owners facing? This could escalate from fines to, I'm assuming, actual lockdown orders where they can't open their doors.
There's definitely risks involved. I mean, it is up to the local jurisdiction on how they're going to enforce this. So it's, you know, local police, whether they're going to issue fines or tickets. But then if it gets really serious, you know, the state could revoke their liquor license, which for a lot of these, you know, bars and taverns is essential. That's in part why they are staying open for indoor services, because their bar business is so essential to them and they don't get that to go. So there is definitely risks involved. These restaurants, a lot of them are, like I said, older. They've been around for numbers of decades in their communities. And they really say that to-go has not worked for them or their patrons. You know, they make the argument that a number of restaurants do, that delivery takes a lot of fees. These third-party delivery companies like Grubhub and Uber Eats, it's very expensive to transport their food. And the amount of bar revenue they can really get from this to-go is pretty limited, even with some of the to-go services that states did allow during the pandemic for them. And, you know, one of the restaurants I talked to, it's a steakhouse, and we did another story that it's tough to get people to buy a $50 steak to go. It's just, it is challenging. So I can sort of see their point. At the same time, you know, I interviewed a lawyer who said, you know, that is just not a good attitude. You really need to invest in doing something to survive, because this is not a winnable situation to just break the law.
Now, for restaurants that would be locking down for a second time, meaning they had already locked down in the spring, how much of a hit did the first round of lockdowns take on their business?
So this one local restaurant I talked to in Illinois said, my business was down 50% during the first lockdown. That is just unsustainable going forward. And he said now that he's reopened for indoor dining, it's still down, but it's nowhere near 50%. So when you're looking at those double-digit decreases, restaurant owners really have to make hard decisions. Is it worth closing indoor dining if it could mean that they close entirely? And at those levels, some of them might have to.
What about the safety precautions restaurant owners have to take here? Installing plexiglass barriers, for example, can be pretty expensive.
You know, those plexiglass barriers alone cost thousands of dollars. One restaurant I talked to, he bought a $10,000 air purifier to try to, you know, reassure patrons that the HVAC system is really working at its top tier to try to keep people safe. So these are real investments. You know, and a lot of these restaurants made these investments during the summer, anticipating that, you know, come winter, their outdoor dining no longer would be really feasible and people would be coming inside. And so they were investing, believing that they would still have limited capacity service going into the winter. This was a real shock when it suddenly was suspended and they spent all this money for these amenities now that they couldn't really use unless they kept offering dining inside.
Now, restaurant owners do say they can do this safely, but especially as colder weather forces people indoors, what is the science telling us about the spread of the virus at restaurants, even with safety precautions in place?
So the studies, you know, it's kind of limited in terms of actual causality, but we do know in general that the virus does spread indoors when people are in close contact for long periods of time and not wearing masks, which are all things that can happen in a restaurant setting. You know, you were there at a table with others and, you know, maybe it's your family, maybe it's not your family. You're wearing a mask for part of it, but then you're taking your mask off to eat and drink. And for a sit-down restaurant, you're probably there for an hour or so. So this is an environment that the virus can't spread. Now, these restaurant owners say, again, they're spacing their tables out, they're investing in HVAC systems, but we really don't know exactly what is working here, both in terms of the safety mechanisms and how the virus spreads, that, you know, a lot of scientific experts just say avoid it.
How are restaurant industry groups responding to that?
They are really pushing back. So there's been a number of studies that have come out this year that point to restaurants as a potential cause for the virus to spread, and they've really pushed back at them. They've said that they're flawed, they're limited in terms of their scope, that they don't rely on contact tracing and other scientific methods to really pinpoint where patrons might have gotten the virus. You know, it could have been in another small gathering or somewhere else, even if they did go to a restaurant during the same time period. So they say it's really unfair to base these local decisions on these studies when these studies, they think, are pretty flawed. And it just comes back to this coronavirus is still very novel. We are still learning about how it's transmitted and how people get it.
Heather, what about the federal aid from the government that was available to small businesses earlier this year? Did that help them? And what assistance are they hoping for or asking for now?
Some of these restaurant owners did say those PPP loans really did help them in the first lockdown. It was helpful to really get through that first phase, and now they're not around anymore. I mean, they don't have that money. They spent it, and no money has come additionally from Congress since. So there's been a real push by the industry, especially independent restaurants, to pass this Restaurants Act. It's been caught between disputing versions in the Senate and the House, and then the election happened and everything's kind of stalled. I mean, I think a growing number of congressional members really think we do need some kind of assistance for restaurants. I mean, everyone has restaurants in their local jurisdictions and sees the impact there. But it has been a very fraught year on many fronts, and getting this done has not happened.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon. Heather, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks so much.
And finally, now that Thanksgiving is over, millions of children are setting their sights on Christmas. Grown-ups always tell kids plenty of stories about Santa and Mrs. Claus, their elves, and of course the reindeer. But this year, the pandemic is inspiring even more elaborate tales to answer new questions, like, will Santa wear a mask? Should hand sanitizer accompany the milk and cookies? And does all that international traveling delivering presents break quarantine rules? Our reporter Melissa Korn says even some government officials are employing creative storytelling.
In Italy, a boy wrote to the prime minister saying, can Santa get the travel documents that he'll need to travel? Just because within Italy right now, you need certain paperwork to really do much of anything, move around outside your neighborhood. A top official in Scotland declared Santa an essential worker. Dr. Fauci here in the U.S. said that Santa has an innate immunity to COVID-19.
And it's also sparking conversations within families.
There's a lot of discussion about social distancing. I spoke to one family where they were kind of joking about not lighting a fire in the fireplace because it would be too hot for Santa to come down. And the boy, who was 5, said, if he yells because it is too hot, I'll want to come out and see him, but don't worry, I'll keep my distance. I'll steer clear and, you know, make sure that I don't get too close because I don't want to get Santa sick. There are stories, you know, I had one older sibling tell her younger sister, oh, well, Mrs. Claus makes magical masks, so that'll protect them all. It's kind of a mix of the reality of today and their magical beliefs, and somehow those combined make it seem like it's all going to be okay for Christmas.
And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Mark Stewart. The show was produced this week with help from Paolo Bossanin, Jenny Ang, Kateri Yoakum, Amanda Llewellyn, Trine Nori, Charlie Turner, Sam Westren, J.R. Whelan, and Chris Sinsley. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.